But I think that ours was in an era of, you know, very happy-go-lucky. And just the fact that the Coke-Pepsi thing was just a huge, you know, trauma, whereas now it's you know, very, it's more serious issues that are being debated between the faculty and the administration and the students, which I think is a good thing. But I see more of a 60s type generation here than what we have. And I think a lot of that is just the 80s was just a funky, mellow, not much going on time anyway, which I think was probably a good time for me to be in college.
One big thing that was going on while you were here is the fraternity renaissance.
Actually, it was not. That is a that is another funny thing. It started the year I left.
Oh, really? The construction started?
The construction started the year
I left. Well, they were talking about it.
They were talking about it. And they needed it. I mean, the fraternity houses really, I guess, I was the last class to have all fraternity houses in the shape that they had become.
What were they like?
Well, the main thing was that you could party on any floor. The living quarters, you know, the main floor where they ate, you know, parties were thrown in the house. And that was just the way it was. So, you know, the hall carpets upstairs were just, you know, disgusting. I mean, they were really gross. And the guys' rooms, you know, were what guys' rooms are going to be. But people would, during parties, go in there and they're smoking, drinking, doing whatever. So, yeah, the fraternity houses, you know, the floors were just covered. And so these hardwood floors would just, you know, be hosed down, which, you know, is so great for hardwood floors. So they really, you know, had some problems, and there were broken windows, but it didn't matter. It was kind of like nobody spent any money on the house, so it didn't matter. The year I came back, I'll never forget, freshman year, not freshman year, first year out, when I came back with my roommates, we all met up here. I guess it was spring, so they had already completed, I guess, 4 or 5 houses. And the parties were in the basement. And not only that, there was a rope on the stairs. You couldn't go into the house during the party. I thought, this is totally weird. Of course, we went under the rope to kind of see what it looked like and walked in. There was a grand piano, and there was a chess set all neatly laid out like they were playing chess. And I'll never forget the books, like Moby Dick. And all these books that had obviously never been touched. They were just newly bound books sitting in these bookshelves and little trinkets and things all over the place. And I was like, this is weird. I can't imagine. So we really did. We never saw a house completed while we were here. I'm not sure exactly when they started the construction, but I do remember that when we came back was when the parties were suddenly in the basement. And there were fines for throwing a rock through a window. And, you know, it's all a good thing. I mean, I think it's real good. But something about being able to be on all floors of the fraternity house was real fun, too. You know, you could kind of, there was like a third floor party and a second floor party, and then there was people in the basement. And now it's kind of like one big party, which it just doesn't have the same character to me. It's just not as much fun. But
so when you come back now, you still go to fraternity parties?
Yeah, actually. I don't know, maybe that's just me. But a lot of the guys,
I'm delighted to hear it because I'm invited to
a lot of the guys that I'm on the board with, we always kinda go and hang out behind Phi Kappa. But yeah, I definitely go. They're totally harmless. and a lot of fun. The bands are always good, and it's fun for me. I'm a big people watcher, so it's fun for me to, and I also like to talk. I like to talk to the students that are here now just about, you know, what it's like, and are you having fun, and so I'm planning on being out there tonight.
Now, you were in, well, no, wait a minute, you mentioned mock convention being a big deal.
Yes.
Tell me about mock convention.
My sophomore year was when mock convention was held. I think that's what the neat thing is about mock convention, is that you're going to be here for just one. But you're going to see one in your experience at WNL if you stay the full 4 years. My mock convention was just great. I was I worked on the Georgia float. I was head of the Georgia float committee. So we made the float, and we did an old Georgia mansion. We did Tara, and we had Rhett and Scarlett on the float. And that was so much fun. And I remember somebody told me to paint Go Dawgs on the back, D-A-W-G-S. I had no idea what they were talking about. You know, I was a sophomore and didn't know the University of Georgia. Of course, I know everything about it now, but, having lived in Atlanta. But I remember painting Go Dawgs, and I was like, what am I doing? But, you know, so I learned something.
It was an educational experience.
It was an if you consider that an educational experience. But the parade was so much fun, and everybody in the whole school was involved. That's what I liked about it. And I remember sitting in the delegation and having a delegate from another, who was a friend of mine, from another delegation, pass me a note and say, you know, the Louisiana delegation challenges you to a whatever, a rum chug or whatever. So I know that the whole drinking thing is not to be discussed in terms of mock convention these days, but it really was just a ton of fun. What was it I was going to say? Something about mock convention. Oh, that was the year Bill Clinton came and spoke. He was our keynote speaker. Oh, little did we know he was going to be the president of the United States. And he came out to the pavilion, and I know people have told about this. But
no, they haven't. I haven't talked to anybody who was there. Tell me.
Played his saxophone and just hooped it up, and we had a couple of friends that just got up there and were dancing with him and got in his limo. And you know, the Secret Service, not they, I don't know who they were at that point. They weren't the Secret Service, but they were the equivalent to the governor. We're like, girls, you're really going to have to get out of here. We got to take the governor back to town. And I just remember thinking, this man is just hooping it up with all these kids. It's so funny. Never realizing that he was ever going to be the president. So now I look at him and I'm like, that was you. So that's neat. I mean, that's kind of neat that we all got to experience the guy who's now leading our country, which, you know, is such a great thing about Mock Convention. These kids get together with, and especially the people that are leading Mock Convention, get to know these, you know, very important people, which is not, you know, something that happens every day, to be able to have dinner with or lunch with or have a phone conversation with Dan Quayle to organize his trip. And I just think that's really neat. I think that's neat, the fact that WL, it was funny, I was just sitting at home, and now that I live at home, it's really great. I'm, you know, real close to my parents. My dad called me 8 o'clock in the morning. He's like, sorry to wake you up. Just want to let you know the mock convention's on C-SPAN. I was like, oh, great, thanks. And I turned it on and watched it all day long. And it was just so funny. I kept looking and seeing faces I recognized, and every time the crowd would cheer, and I'd see just what great coverage Washington and Lee was getting from this, you know, nationwide network. It was just unbelievable. I'm so proud. You know, it's like at the bottom of Washington and Lee University, and they kept flashing up how often Washington and Lee had been correct. And I was like, people all over the world are watching this right now. This is so great. And so I listened to all the speeches, and they were just great this year. So that just, it made me real proud. And I think that's something that's real good for WNL. And I'm glad that it's getting bigger and stronger, and I'm glad that they got it right again this year.
One of the things that I found intriguing, I found it, the whole process very exciting to be there. It was a thrill for me to be part of the whole thing. And one of the things I found intriguing was, and since you watched it, you know what I mean, that everybody was so excited that it was a Republican convention.
Yes.
And they didn't have to pretend anymore.
Well, I have to tell you, that was tough for us. We were not a crew of Democrats. there were some, but I, at the time, and one thing that I wish is that I had been a little bit older when Mock Convention came. I think it's sometimes unfortunate for the freshmen, maybe even for the sophomores, because you're not as involved. You're not, I mean, some of us, you know, got as involved as we could be, but we were not as involved as the juniors and seniors who had several years to plan and were heads of the committees. And so I think, you know, where your dice fall, I mean, that's up to you, but I really wish that I had been a junior or a senior at the time to get more involved, but also to understand what was really going on. I'm not even sure that some of us understood that we were nominating for the party that was not in power. And I don't think, you know, mock Democratic convention, I think some of us probably thought that every year there was a mock Democratic convention. That was what it was referred to, was the mock Democratic convention. And I'm sure that some of the younger people, and I know I probably felt the same way, I was like, oh, every year we have this mock Democratic convention. Is that because most of us have Republican thoughts? And, you know, it's like, I think it suddenly occurred to me maybe a year later that next year's convention, if a Democrat were to be in office, would be, or the next 4 years would be a Republican convention. But I think that was real fun and probably brought a different air to the convention just because.
Well, was it a lot of play acting? Were people trying? Was it hard to be enthusiastic
about? It wasn't a lot of play acting. It was real easy to be enthusiastic, but I don't think we were as enthusiastic about the speakers as they were this year, simply because they would get up there and they would speak on the Democratic platform, which a lot of us were staunchly opposed to. Not staunchly, at that age you're never staunchly opposed to anything. But our parents didn't believe in, or I can't say that because my parents are hardcore Democrats, which they don't know how they raised a Republican. It's like, well, look where you sent me to school. But I think it wasn't play acting at all. It's just you didn't have that same paparazzi that was there for this last one, where they were just like really psyched that Newt was going to be here.
It was.
I thought the funniest thing that I heard on TV was when they were talking about how the kids were going, Newt, 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 and how Dan Quayle or somebody said, do you hear all that booing? And they're like, no, that's not booing. They're going, Newt, Newt, Newt.
Well, it was very low. It was,
yeah, Newt, 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 Newt. So it sounded Newt. Like booing.
So it did sound like
it sounded like booing to me on the TV. So I was glad that he had said that in his speech, that it was that it wasn't booing, that they were saying Newt.
Well, through the day, as you probably heard, it got lower and lower and lower. And those of us who'd been there in the afternoon knew what it was. But in the evening, there were people who were saying,
why
what's
are
this
they booing?
What's
yeah.
this booing? And we said, oh, no. It's
Newt, Newt. Yeah, it's not
Newt. The tone got lower and lower as they were doing
so that. I thought that was funny, that was what they were doing. But, this year it looked even bigger and better than I've ever seen it. You know, maybe it's because I was watching it on TV, but I'm just real glad that's come to the national forefront and that WNL is still, and just the number of articles that were published about it this year, I just feel like it's, it also is because the race was at a good point.
It was,
and I'm real glad they moved
timing
it up.
For it.
I mean, if they hadn't moved it up, it wouldn't have been as much fun.
It was the perfect timing
for it. So I think they should move
it
up even maybe another week, just make it a real, you know, unknown.
Yeah, it was the perfect timing.
Yeah.
It was as dramatic as it could have been.
Yeah, but I remember that whole week and the weeks leading up to it very fondly. It was a real good experience.
So there's a lot of partying associated with it, too.
Yes, definitely. Well, we didn't have, now they have a homecoming float, a homecoming parade, and I think that was an old tradition. That we never had the whole time I was here. I tell my friends now, I'm like, yeah, I went to a board meeting for homecoming and a lot of fun. They had the parade, you know, because I've seen it a couple years. They're like, the what? The parade? So for us, the parade was just a really big deal because we didn't have, this is the only time in our 4 years that we ever built a float because we didn't have the big football parades or float buildings. So that was real fun. I think it might not be as big a deal now because they have it every, every fall they have a parade.
Well, were sports important?
Sports were very important. I always had a lot of good friends on the football team, and I always felt bad for them because lacrosse was such a big deal. And the football games, you know, people went to, but they went for the first half and then went to a party or partied first and then went to the second half. And I always felt bad because those guys worked so hard. You know, they practiced long hours and they had the same schoolwork we did. And had they gone to a different school, they probably would have gotten a lot more support. So I always felt real bad for the teams and like the basketball team. And it wasn't the same as, you know, as the larger schools. But they were, you know, just as hard. So it was always amazing to me the commitment that they had. And, you know, the lacrosse games were always so much fun. But that's just, it's the area of the country we're in. It's the population that we draw from, the Baltimore population where lacrosse was real big in high school. But women's sports was just a whole other issue when I was here. I don't know how many sports we had freshman and sophomore year. But we started, like, club lacrosse, which was real fun for us girls from the South who'd never seen it before. I remember when guys who went away to Episcopal would come down, like, for their spring breaks or come home for the summer with these lacrosse sticks. And we'd go out to the park and they'd show us how to throw. And we're like, what is this? This is so funny. So that was real fun for me to play because I just never played the sport. And I was really big into the music area. I spent a lot of time in this building. What I'm real happy to see now is the obviously the music and drama and those departments have taken off with the building of the Linfest Center. And I know a lot of people were like, what are we doing building this big performing arts center? We don't even have a performing arts major. You know, it's kind of, you know, a strange thing to spend so much money on. But I really do think, I used to be embarrassed by our facilities. It was like, you know, my high school had a much bigger, better auditorium than my college did. This is kind of a strange thing. So now I really do think that that's really helped the school out. And I know that a lot more students are involved in music. And also, you know, you get the backlash from the other departments. They're like, man, we're going to get a bunch of violinists in here, you know. But I think it's good to have a diversified group. I guess now they've got, I don't know, 6 or 7 or more singing ensembles, which is amazing to me. There's a new one popping up all the time. But I think that's real good that the arts has been enhanced here because it was really lacking, and especially on the drama side. There just weren't that many people that were interested in it. So that's real good for me to see that that's changing.
You were, before we started, you were mentioning that you were in Jubilee.
Right.
Tell me about that.
I actually only did that for a short while, so I probably wouldn't put that in the book if I were you, because I ran out of time. I did more just in the regular chorus, mm-hmm. And I also played the piano for a short while with Southern Comfort, which was real fun. I got to play the piano for them at one of their concerts.
But tell me about those experiences. I mean, what do you get out of being in a group like that?
The best thing about being in any of the singing ensembles is just meeting different people that you wouldn't otherwise meet. And we went on great trips, which, again, you really get to know people a lot better. You know, guys and girls both. When Dr. Spice took us to London, that was really just one of the greatest experiences that I remember in the singing groups. And also they do trips, you know, over spring break to alumni chapters. And I know that the alumni really love to see them come. And that's really one of the better events that we have at any of our chapters is when we get a singing group to come through because they really are entertaining and a lot of fun. I don't really know, you know, what else to say about that. It's just that, you know, if you love to sing, and you love to sing with other people who love to sing, it's really a lot of fun. And to have the ability, and Dr. Spice really did a great job of getting us performances, you know, the ability to sing in Lee Chapel. And I think standing on stage in Lee Chapel and singing a solo is probably one of the best memories that I have. It's just the ability to stand up there in front of an audience of people and just in that environment. It was just really unbelievable, just really neat.
Why is Lee Chapel special?
I think it all stems from your first day when they have you sit in there and they just instill this aura about the place and about the school and about the honor system that you really, I didn't forget it. Just that feeling of sitting in there that first day, you know, sitting straight up in those benches and just kind of looking around at all my classmates that were just like me, you know, from all over the place and, you know, just kind of looking at the two pictures, you know, it's a vision I'll never forget. And looking at Lee in repose, I mean, it's just the whole experience is just really unbelievable where, you know, 10 minutes earlier, you were outside running around, laughing, joking, and, you know, 2 hours later, you were going to be down at the fraternity house, you know, drinking grain punch on the back porch. But for right now, you're sitting in Lee Chapel, and you're gazing upon these different visual effects and looking at the plaques engraved on the wall, and it just really is just a very special place. And you're hearing some things from some people that you just learn to really respect. Just the whole concept of the honor system and being a gentleman and everything that goes with that. And I use that word truthfully. I still think that is a great way to put it, you know, act as a gentleman in every way. And the women must do that as well. I don't take any offense of going back to that phrase, because I really do think it pertains. And the whole concept of the honor system here is really just an overriding concept that I think helps the school in every way.
Talk to me about that.
To me, the not cheating was that was just a given. You would hope that at other universities that would also be the case. Whether it is or not, I don't know. I can't judge. To me, the honor system was much more important in the areas of respecting everybody around you, respecting their things, putting things back where you got them, much less to do than copying pages from a book or copying from somebody's test, or but more just the feeling that you got that when you left your books in your carrel, they were going to be there when you got back. Or if you left your homework assignment, somebody wasn't going to come and take it. I mean, just that feeling is something that I've talked to a lot of people about they didn't have in their college experience. It was the race to the library to get the book, because if it was some article that you were supposed to look at, you run the risk of someone ripping the pages out. I mean, that is just absurd. But you hear those stories about other, you know, college experiences, and I can't imagine that here, and I can't imagine going to college in that environment. But what I loved is people, you know, riding their bikes up and just toss them on the ground, running to class, and just, you know, my bike is going to be fine there. And I don't know if it's the same now or not. I don't know if there's, you know, still that feeling, but it was such a great feeling when I was here, just that my stuff was going to be there, you know, where I left it. And that feeling of trust to be able to take your exams at any time is really, you know, just an unbelievable thing that you don't get at most schools, where, you know, somebody could take it on a Monday and I could be taking it on a Friday, and the professors, you know, how easy would that be for you to switch exams? Like, me take one on Monday, you take one on Friday, and then we would ace the other. I mean, just the fact that doesn't even cross students' minds and cross professors' minds, or certainly didn't when we were, you know, when I was here. I don't know if it's still the same. I would hope that it is. That is such a great feeling of trust that's instilled in the students that I think they turn around and instill in each other. But I think a lot of it comes down from the faculty. Just saying, you know, I trust that you're going to do the right thing, so that we can feel good about ourselves and look to our peers and say, I trust that you're going to do the right thing. And I think that's really helped me. It might have clouded my judgment about other people a little bit in the real world, but I think it made me a better person, and I think it made me realize if I couldn't trust this other person, it wasn't someone I wanted to work with. So while, you know, I think people sometimes worry, oh, Tabinel, you went to such a sheltered environment. It's like going to a high school all over again, and everything's hunky-dory, and you don't have to worry about the thievery or cheating or people, you know, pushing you down to get ahead. You know, you're going to stumble when you get out into the real world. I don't think that's true. I think you seek out other people that have had the same experience you have to work with, and just kind of, you know, go on that way. So that was kind of my take on the Lee Chapel and the honor system. I know I do a lot of interviewing of students now, and that's the first question I ask. Have you heard about the honor system at W&L? And I sometimes judge whether, you know, what I write about them based on what they say about it. Number one, if they've never heard of it, then I know they haven't really looked at W&L. They haven't really talked to anyone about it, because I feel like if they had truly researched at all about the school, and these are students, when I'm doing the interview, these are students that are generally seniors, and it's pretty late in the process, mm-hmm. and they haven't been able to make it to campus, so they're interviewing with an alum, and I love mm-hmm. doing it, because I think it's important that somebody talks to the student before they come here. Mm-hmm. I know they used to say that everybody at W&L has an interview, and I do really feel like, I don't know how many, 95% maybe, maybe it is 100% of students that are accepted to W&L have had an interview of some sort, whether it's alum. So I think that's real important, which is why, you know, I like doing that. But if I do hear that, you know, they don't really know anything about it, And I think they're not real serious about WNL. They haven't really talked to anybody about it. They don't really know what it stands for. And then I get some answers that just blow me away. When they've said, oh, I've heard this, or I've talked to so-and-so about this, and that's why I want to go there, I'm like, check. You know, mm-hmm. This person understands what it's going to be like and the responsibility that's going to be on them, you know, when they get here. But I just remember going to professors and saying, you know, I've got this going on and this going on, and I really can't take this test next Tuesday. Could I take it next Thursday? And having the professor say yes. I mean, what a great thing mm-hmm. that was. And you didn't abuse it because, you know, you didn't know if it was always going to be there if you started abusing it. Mm-hmm. But just to be able to have that that trust instilled was really something that was great.
Were there any teachers who particularly made a difference for you?
There were several, and I think every student has two or three teachers that really have an impact on them. I can name names. I thought at first I was going to be a biology major. I was going to go pre-med. I thought since I was the only person in my sixth grade class that could dissect the frog and the only person in my 11th grade biology class that could dissect the pig, that I was just destined. You know, I was the only one that could stand the side of it. So I was the Mrs. Scalpel. And I remember thinking, oh, well, I must be just destined to be a doctor. It's definitely pre-med. So Dr. Nye in the biology department was my first advisor. And I went through my first year, and I forget when it was that I decided that I didn't want to be in school for however many more years, that I wanted to go ahead and get a degree that I could get out and have a job with. I don't remember what it was that made me decide I didn't want to be a biology major, but I changed my mind, and I went to Dr. Nye, and I'll never forget just the look on his face, because I'd been in his biology class, and I'd done really well, and he was my advisor, and so we really hit it off. I loved him. He thought he was great. And I remember I went to him and I said, you know, I'm going to change over to the C school for my sophomore year, which I guess is now the Williams School. And I'm going to be an accounting major. He's like, an accounting major? What on earth? I was like, to me, that was just the first thing I could think of when it came to a person who could get a job when they first got out of school. I was like, accounting. Okay, I could do that. You know, it's like, that has to have something to do with math. So I could do that. And I just remember the look on his face when he said, you know, this is such a waste. I know you were really good at this, and I know that you really thought that you wanted to do this. And he just really took a personal interest. But I said, no, I really do think that I don't want to be pre-med. And since then, every time I'd run into him on campus, he'd be like, hey, how you liking crunching those numbers? But he was just real funny about it and real supportive. And just real cute about it. So I remember that fondly. And then once I did get into the C school, there were several teachers that I just had a real admiration for, because most of the professors that I had outside jobs at some point in their lives. And that I thought was important. And I know it's different in business school and in English or a history major, but these people brought real world experience to the classroom, which I really appreciated. And so I guess amongst them, Joe Goldston was obviously a real favorite, because he would talk about the real world. He would put everything that he said in the context, and forget about this book, let's talk about how it works. And that to me was very intriguing. And then later on, Kip Perkle, who was new, kind of came in.
Who's
and
that?
Kip Perkle. And I think I know he just got tenure recently. But he came and he taught a policy class. And I remember that as, I think, the best class I ever had. Because, again, it revolved out. So for some reason, I was fixated on the real world. I wanted to get out there. I wanted to be a part of it. But his class taught about companies, and we talked about, and we had cases. And a case would just be, and it was pretty much run like a Harvard Business School would run a case. I don't know. I didn't go to Harvard Business School, but I've read all the funny books. but it pretty much run like a business school would run its cases, where you had a case and you studied it and you did all the research and you worked in a team, worked in a group of people and came up with a solution. And we used film, we used videotape. I had a group of five people, and that to me was the best thing. Was we'd get so into these cases. We would stay up all night long working on our strategy, and you go do research on this, and you start making that, you start building this, and you start videotaping that, and that was so much fun. I mean, granted, at that time we were probably either juniors or seniors, and so you kind of, you know, get more into the group thing than just an individual study. But I just remember that. I think that was the best academic experience I had. And he would grill you. You would get in there to what we called present your case, and you'd wear a suit. Again, real world. You'd wear a suit, you'd go in there, and you'd be play acting, basically, as the CFO or CEO of this company. And you would, one of ours was basically us sitting around a boardroom talking about, how things, what had gone wrong in the company and how we were going to fix it and all the research. I mean, it was just really neat. And that, I think if professors can bring a little bit of the real world, and again, I come from a very stinted side of it, because I didn't, and that's another thing that I'd have to say, I didn't get to take a lot of English classes. I didn't take any art. I didn't take any history. I got out of WNL without ever having a history class, which everyone in this university will be and should be mortified at that. But I placed out. When I took two AP classes my sophomore and junior year, in high school, I took AP European and AP American History and made, good enough grades on the AP exams to place out of history. And which was good for me because in my major, there were so many classes you had to take. But a lot of times I look back and I think wistfully, or wish that I could go back another 4 years and be an art major, to be any kind of major, be a languages major. That's one thing that I feel like I didn't get. So I went to a very different WNL than a lot of people, than a lot of my friends did. The ones that got to take, I did get to take a Sidney Cowling English, which he was just another just great joy. So I did take, that was one thing I said, if I only get to take one English class while I'm here, it's going to be with Sid Cowling. So I did get to do that, but I had...
Tell me about that.
Oh, it was just wonderful. His mode of teaching and just the aura around him and the respect that the students had for him was unbelievable. I mean, it really was just a fascinating experience. And I could just sit and listen to him lecture all day. And he really was interested in what the students had to say. And I don't really remember what the situation was, but I remember taking a paper to him and I had really thrown it together. I don't remember what other thing I had going on in my major, but that week was just overbearing, and I really threw this English paper together, and I took it to him, and he said, "I'm going to extend your deadline one more week, and I want you to bring it back to me." And I did, and he said, "This is really one of the best pieces I've read in a while." And I was like, "I just needed a little more time." He said, "You should have asked for a little more time." And that stuck with me. He said, "You should have been honest about, what was going on with all your other classes and that this week just happened to be a really bad week." And he said, "You just should have asked me for more time. I would have given it to you." And so from there on, and that was probably my freshman year or my sophomore year. From there on, I didn't hesitate to go to a professor and say, and it sounds like I did that a lot. I really didn't do it that much. But whenever there was a problem or whenever there was something I didn't understand or if it was a homework assignment I didn't get to, I would just say, here's what I was doing. And I was singing in this and I was, practicing for that and doing this and doing that. And I just really didn't have time to prepare. But that stuck with me when he said that. Let's see, Sid Cowling was just great. So many other professors were so good too. I can't remember his name now, but he was real funny. Mm-hmm. but that is one thing that I would encourage people to do is to try to diversify their course load if they can.
Did you have any problem with how few women there were on the faculty?
There were no women in my major at all. I didn't have a problem with it, but again, I'm the type that says don't rock the boat. They're doing what they think is best. I don't know. I've always worked better with men than with women, and I'll just admit that. So I don't know. I mean, some women feel like if they had had a woman professor, they might have been able to relate better. Mm-hmm. I relate better to men. So,
were there many girls in your major?
There weren't too many, but there weren't as many as like in an English major, but an accounting major there were pretty many. In business, in my business classes, there weren't that many. I would say in a class of 15 people, there'd be about 3 girls. So yeah, that was a little strange. But when I left and went to work for Arthur Anderson, I went to work for a group that was 22 men and me, because it was computer related, and there just weren't any women in that field at the time. I mean, there were women in there, but not that many. So I kind of went from the same environment that I was in here, working in the same environment there, and to this day, I still work mostly with all men. I'd have to say, I don't know, 90% of the people in my field are men. So I don't know if that was because I came from this environment that I felt more comfortable in it, or that I came to this environment because I felt more comfortable in it. I really don't know. It's kind of funny, I haven't really even thought about that, but after going to an all-girls school all my life, I may have subconsciously chose this place just to interact with men. And if you write anything about that, people are going to be like, okay, let's see, she has an identity, or a gender crisis going on.
We'll send this to the psychology department.
I know. She needs some help. But I really do. I've always just kind of worked, not better with men, but I've just enjoyed it, working in the same environment.
Now, you were in several of the more interesting organizations here. You were in Cathacon?
Mm-hmm.
Talk about that.
That was Cathacon was real different than it was.
When you were here?
It was I think the year before I got here. I think there was 1 year where it was all men, but it was very new. Mm-hmm. When I was here. But the process of getting into Cathacon was very different than it is now. I think now is probably a better way to do it. But then you were basically voted on from within Cathacon. So you were basically picked by the people who were in Cathacon. It was like a great honor. I mean, that was a real honor for me to be chosen as someone who might be able to make a difference. And I guess Jim Farrow refers to Cathacon now as alumni in training, which is exactly what it is. You get involved in the different areas of the school. You assist alumni when they come back. You're kind of in charge of alumni weekends. You assist the alumni house with their stuff. You really do, and now as a member of the alumni board, we get, for our individual chapters, and the chapter presidents, you know, all around the country also get the names of all Cathacon members when they move to their cities. So immediately you are thrust into the, we need your help, you know, be on the alumni board, be on the committee to do this and do that. So I think it's a very important group of people to kind of assimilate and kind of go ahead and put, I mean, the alumni office knows what they're doing with this group, because you put this honor, you bestow this honor on them, and you let them walk around with a cool blue tag on alumni weekends, and they get to be involved in neat stuff. But when they graduate, they feel this sense of responsibility. And I'm not saying that it's a bad thing that the alumni office is doing. I'm saying it's a great thing. It's a very good marketing tactic
real
they've got
smart.
Going. It's real smart. At the time, I didn't know that this was happening to me. but what it did was it instilled a sense of responsibility to the school. Mm-hmm. For me, and I know a lot of other Cathacon members feel the same way. You are forever a Cathacon member. Not like it's some big elite society, but you have been allowed to do certain things while you're in school, so that when you get out of school, you still feel this responsibility to the school, this bond with the school, this feeling like you were given something and you want to give back.
So how are CafeCon members selected now?
Now they apply. You can actually apply to be a CafeCon member, and then you go through an interview process, which I think you probably get a better sampling of people that way, which I think is important in keeping alumni relations good from all groups of people.
And who does the interviewing?
Current CafeCon members, I think, is how they do it now. Mm-hmm. But I think that's probably a better way, because you run the risk, if not doing that, that my little type of person picks me, and then I'm the same type of person, and I pick my type of person, and it just goes on, you know, the same fraternity pick their fraternity mm-hmm. brothers, and it goes on and on. You don't get the same mix of people. Mm-hmm. But kind of the one other thing is the sense of commitment. One story I haven't told was why I do so much for WNL now. I think I'd probably do it no matter what, just because I really love the school and I want to see it prosper. I want to see it continue. But WNL really did change my life. I got a full scholarship to go to school here, which my parents are lovely, wonderful people, but I'm fairly sure that they would not have been real happy about paying, at the time it was $13,000 a year, to send me here. So I got to come here free ride. And I also had a National Merit Scholarship, so I got $2,000 a year just for being in school. And that was so great, but it was so wonderful. I was selected to come on campus in my senior year and basically interview for these scholarships, and they call it Honor Scholars Weekend. You get to stay on campus, and you interview with students, and you interview with faculty, and then I was selected for a full scholarship, which was really just the best thing that the school could have ever done for me. I mean, that was great. I don't think I would have been able to come here had I not received the scholarship. So I really do feel a certain commitment to WNL. And like I said, I'm sure that I would be doing this, or the amount of work for WNL that I do now, anyway. But it just kind of, I'll never forget them doing that for me. I mean, that really was a great thing that I got from the school. So I continue to try to give back every year. I'll never be able to get up to how many thousands of dollars that was in giving of my time, but I'm trying. So that's kind of why I feel a sense of commitment. That plus CafeCon, things like that through my years here, being able to work in student phone-a-thons. Oh, I have one good story about the student phone-a-thon, and I know we want to wrap it up.
Well, no, I just... my light's flashing. Let me pop in another tape.